You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. It's Friday once again. It's Friday the 9th of February 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, as it's Truthful Out Radio, we are joined by the man behind Truthful Out Productions, Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told producer, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Good evening, Sven. I'm fine, thanks. Looking forward to tonight. We've got quite a bit to cover.
Yeah, I think we've got a really interesting episode for listeners tonight. We're going to be looking at Rudolf Hess, because some new pictures of him have surfaced, and we're also going to go into the background to Rudolf Hess, and we're also going to talk about Freemasonry, because that's been in the news this week. The Freemasons are the latest group to claim minority status, that the rest of the world is discriminating against them. And I do like to think that maybe some of your work actually helped to contribute to that, Dennis.
Well, I think if anybody watched the episodes, I think they think twice about joining Freemasons. I'm talking about people sensible. There's always going to be some people joining them, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it is an evil fraternity.
Yeah, well, there's been quite a bit of exposure of the Masons since the internet's been around.
Yeah,
and stuff like your work has reached millions of people. So I'm sure people have been asking them uncomfortable questions. And we're going to get to that later on. But before we really begin, I've got an announcement to make. I've also made it on the Daily Nationalist. That is Simon Shepherd, the author and also the publisher of Heretical Publishing and Heretical.com. He publishes revisionist works. He's also got one of the, I think it's revisionist.net, a really good site that exposes the Holler Hoax. Well, he's in court for alleged speech crimes. That's York Crown Court on Thursday, the 22nd of February this year. Anyone that's in that area, if they could go along and support him, it would be much appreciated. He's already done time for Tales from the Holler Hoax, the comic that was making jokes about the Holler Hoax, basically. I think he did 4 years for that. So now that he's been accused of calling his neighbours racial epithets or something, and they're illegal immigrants that have been given a second home, basically. And he doesn't think he has actually called them any racial epithets. They've just made this up as an accusation against him. But he's going to have to be in court and he's going to have to answer for that. I think he may even be defending himself as well. I know that he is defending himself in one of these instances because he's had three run-ins with them, basically. So that's Thursday, the 22nd of February. Please do go along and support him. Do you want to add anything to that, Dennis, before we start delving into Rudolf Hess?
Well, this week there's been, with this 100 years for the vote for women, there's been a lot of feminism as well. And it really is starting to get to me now, all this political correctness. You know, you can't say boo to a donkey. I just wonder where it's all going to end, really.
Well, you bring up the suffragettes and feminism, and I just did a podcast on that with Florian Geyer today, the Daily Nationalist. I think it's a pretty good takedown of the suffragettes. So anyone that is interested in that, check out the Daily Nationalist from today, where we completely took apart the suffragette terrorists. Do you know they bombed churches, Dennis?
Seven churches? That doesn't surprise me. In fact, if I were on that horse, I'd turn around and run over again.
Yeah, I mean, that just sums it up, really, doesn't it? Throwing yourself in front of a horse. That's how deranged these female terrorists were. But that's another story, although it did take place in the last century, and that's the sort of topics that we're going to be dealing with first off. First off, we've got this article from a couple of weeks back that was sent to me in the Daily Mail, and it was about new pictures of Rudolf Hess surfacing. And this is what they have to say about it. Fascinating final pictures of Hitler's deputy, Rudolf Hess, have been found and put on sale, along with a note to his son about his mysterious flight to Britain to try to end the war. The never-before-seen images show the former deputy Führer as a frail and elderly man in the grounds of the infamous Spandau prison. Hess spent 41 years in the West Berlin jail after the war when he was convicted of crimes against peace and sentenced to life behind bars. the National Socialist supposedly hanged himself, aged 93, in 1987 in the summer house that had been built for him in the grounds. The chilling images have been put up for sale alongside a note written to his son Wolf while he was incarcerated saying, "I made it once to England for you." They have been unearthed by a British prison warden who got to know Hess during his time, locked up at Spandau. And I wonder if it wasn't this prison warden that actually did away with him. Dennis, what do you think about these pictures that have been released of Rudolf Hess? What, 20 years?
Took a while to come out, haven't they, really?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't blame the guy for trying to sell them, but I mean, at the end of the day, this is an untold, or certainly, there's no real ending to this story about Hess. You know, I believe he went to England on a peace mission to avert the war, and, you know, all Churchill could do was throw him in prison. And as far as committing suicide, again, I don't believe that. I listened to his son actually on YouTube a while back, and his son certainly believes he was murdered.
Well, I think David Irving has shown that he was murdered. But just seeing these pictures of him, you know, it just makes me so sad to think about it. He was such a brave and courageous man, and he tried to stop the war, and he was rewarded for that with 41 years in prison, in solitary confinement. He wasn't able to see his family. They tried to send him mad. They put him on experimental drugs, trying to get him to talk. Just horrific the way they treated him. And yet the man tried to avert the war and to bring about peace. And just seeing the pictures of him as a frail, elderly man, it just makes me so sad and so angry at the way that he was treated. And angry at the left, because the left should have been holding him up as a hero. They talk about pacifism, they talk about wanting peace. And yet this man tried to avert the war. He tried to stop the war. He went against his own Führer's instructions to try and stop the war. And look at the way he was treated. It's just horrific. I mean, what kind of a crime is that? Crimes against peace. I mean, they just invented that. They invented it because they couldn't think of anything that he'd done.
Well, I've been researching the British Empire this week, and that just a farce, to be honest, to say that you know, they were put away for 40-odd years for that crime. Can I just say that in Britain at that time, I did some research a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you've heard of the Riot Club at all. This was a secret organisation in England of politicians, really high ranking, something like 230 of the elite didn't want to go to war. They felt that Hitler was going to be the only obstacle to communism, and that list included the Duke of Wellington as well. So there was quite a strong feeling in the elite that. You know, they didn't want to go to war, or they certainly didn't want communism. And so Hess came over here. Obviously, he would have had some contacts. I know people went out to Germany to visit Hitler and whatever. But again, with the Riot Club, Churchill, MI5 managed to infiltrate it. And when the war broke out, they were put in prison. I think Joyce was a member as well. William Joyce, he managed to escape and went over to Germany, did the radio, Lord Ha Ha. But certainly, it's criminal to think, even to call the, you know, Hitler and the Nazi regime as evil. Like I said, the British Empire has a lot to answer for. It really does.
Oh, Arnold Leese was in prison as well. Regulation 18B. They're just locked up. Anyone that didn't want the war, basically. And a lot of them were the elite. I seem to remember reading one quote somewhere, and they said that there were more medals there than had been seen at the Memorial Day, meaning that there are more officers in the prison courtyard than had ever been seen gathered together before. Were they locked?
I think I said last week, didn't I? I said I've got this thing about how the Jews using Muslims now to eradicate the white race. I think they use the white race, certainly the military of the British Empire, to further their agenda of world domination. And I think also after the war, they switched from using England as a military to use in America as a military, because America's never had a day's peace since 1945. And this is a theory that I'm looking into, because I really do believe the British Empire, the British military, was hijacked by the Rothschilds, the Jews, and the cult of the elite.
Well, quite clearly, Britain was the Jews' attack dog before America. The next article that I've got to do with Rudolf Hess. This came out last year, and this is the Great Britain basically trying to absolve themselves of Rudolf Hess being in prison all that time. And it's entitled "Britain Claims It Repeatedly Asked for Hess to Be Released." And it says Britain repeatedly pressed for the release of Adolf Hitler's deputy Rudolf Hess from solitary confinement in Spandau Prison, Berlin, before his suicide in 1987. Foreign Office files released last year reveal. The papers left by the British military governor of Spandau show pleas for Hess's release on humanitarian grounds were made by foreign secretaries including Alec Douglas-Home, James Callaghan and Douglas Hurd. An appeal was also drafted in the name of Margaret Thatcher in 1982 to be sent to the Soviet Premier Leonid Brezhnev. There is, to my mind, no justification for keeping Hess in prison any longer. He is 88. He has been in prison for 40 years. He has been without the company of other prisoners for over 16 years. Humanitarian reasons demand that no one should be treated this way, the draft letter said. Each of the 11 unilateral British appeals, which dated back to 1957, along with 14 others made separately or jointly by the US and French authorities, were rejected by an unwavering Soviet insistence that the release of the former deputy Nazi leader would be an insult to the 20 million Soviet war debt. There were also fears that his release could fuel a resurgence of neo-Nazism. Hess killed himself at the age of 93 on the 17th of August 1987, having been the sole prisoner in the Berlin jail since the release of fellow Nazis Albert Speer and Balder von Schirach in 1966. Spandau was demolished to prevent it from becoming a neo-Nazi shrine. I find that quite surprising, Dennis, that they've actually got records of them calling for his release going back to 1957, because surely they could have released him. I mean, Spandau prison was held by all four of them, wasn't it? Not just the Soviets.
I don't think that there were any sympathy at all for any imprisoned German at that time. Little things that I did find out about him, by the way. He was actually born in Egypt. I'm not sure if you knew that or not. It took him 14 years, apparently, to get into Germany. And then in the beginning of World War I, he enlisted in the German army, where he was wounded twice, but then later switched to become a pilot, which obviously helped him in his trip to Scotland. Fascinating guy. I mean, the first time he ever heard Hitler speak, He was absolutely gone with what he was seeing. And he actually said that when you come across people who you class as, the greatnesses around them, usually the longer you're with them, the more it wears off. But he said with Hitler, the longer you were with him, the greater he got.
Well, you can see him. You can see the look of admiration in his eyes, can't you?
Without a doubt.
Film it is. There's one where he's really applauding and Sieg Heiling, and you can just, you know that it's genuine, that he really believes in this man. And he's really grateful to him for what he's done for Germany. So you're saying he's really an Egyptian then? He's not
even
German.
That's what I found, yeah. Born in Egypt. Alexandria, Egypt.
Well, let's see what really happened to Rudolf Hess then. It says here, on the 10th of May 1941, Deputy Führer of the Third Reich, Rudolf Hess, provoked widespread intrigue and speculation when he embarked on an astonishing flight to Scotland. In one of the most bizarre episodes of World War II, Hitler's deputy flew solo for almost 1,000 miles from Bavaria in a Messerschmitt Bf 110, before parachuting into a field near Eaglesham in Scotland, apparently on a one-man peace mission in the days leading up to Germany's invasion of Russia. Upon being captured in Scotland, Hess gave a false name and said he had an important message for the Duke Douglas Hamilton, the Duke of Hamilton, a fellow aviator whom he had never met. Hess mistakenly believed that the Duke was part of an anti-government faction and prominent in opposition to war with Germany. But one thing I'd just say about that before I pass it over to you, Dennis, was it says there that he parachuted into the field. Now, there's some confusion about this because a lot of the things, especially on Wikipedia, it says that he flew his own plane over here and landed there. And yet other reports say that he parachuted out of the plane. And if the plane landed here, where's the wreckage? Did he crash land the plane? Did he parachute out of it? What really happened? Do you know?
Well, I haven't really gone into great detail. From what I can remember, I would have thought he crash landed. I mean, he did want to speak to somebody at high ranking up in Scotland, but never got the chance. I mean, as soon as he was landed, you know, Churchill was alerted and he was rounded up and taken away. But I do believe it was a peace mission, and because Hitler himself didn't want to go to war, but unfortunately, the Russians were massing on the borders of Europe, and he had to preempt that attack.
Well, I think it's quite clear that he was obviously expecting to meet up with the Duke, so he must have had contact with somebody that was pretending to be the Duke. I have heard that they basically the intelligence services got the Duke to convince him to come over, and that he had the ear of some of the royalty, and that they would be able to stop it. So they tried to convince Hess to actually come over, and then they double crossed him. And I think you're right there. He must have crashed the aeroplane and jumped out by parachute.
Yeah.
And where had he ever had any training to do that before? You think of that man's
courage?
Well,
he was a pilot, wasn't he? I mean, he were injured in the war twice, and decided to become a pilot. So he would have had some experience in an aeroplane, but certainly not in crash landing, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, I'm sure I remember hearing somewhere that he hadn't had any experience of actually parachuting. That was the first time that he parachuted. Where he landed, they actually put up a memorial. Some nationalists found out where it was, they bought the field, and they put a memorial up there. And then a TV company, ITV, with a load of leftists, went there and desecrated the memorial and smashed it to pieces.
Because I knew something would have happened. Well, they desecrated his grave as well, didn't they? Dug his grave up, didn't they? And buried him at sea or something.
How can you do this to a man that was so courageous and just wanted peace? I just don't understand it. It seems to me to go against everything that leftists preach.
Yeah, but it doesn't with me because, you know, once you realise communism, One World War II, and the attempt then to wipe out National Socialism, Hess would have been one of the top of the list, I believe.
Well, I think what he was hoping to do was to get this peace treaty and then say, come with us against Russia, let's liberate Eastern Europe. And what happened is...
But he wouldn't have known, would he, that the Russians were already bought and paid for with the Russian Revolution.
Yeah, they were already doing deals with Britain. Well, the Russians come into it next. By 1991, the KGB claimed that the Duke of Hamilton was not directly involved, but that fake letters purporting to be from him were sent to Hess by MI6 with the intention of luring him to Britain. This information was said to have come from Kim Philby, a British agent and one of the Cambridge Five secretly working for Russian intelligence. In documents released by the Public Record Office, Hess makes no mention of a lure, and the Duke of Hamilton is unaware of any faked letters having been sent under his name. Kim Philby, who it says here is a British agent, was a Jewish communist spy, as far as I'm aware.
I think they all were then five, weren't they? I think.
Yeah.
Well, the Queen's cousin or something. He managed to escape to Russia.
Well, this is how these Jews repaid us. You know, they keep talking about how, we were refugees and Britain took us in and we were fleeing from the Nazis and now you must let in all the Syrian refugees. Well, these Jewish refugees that were let in, they grew up to be spies for the Soviet Union in Britain.
Mm.
That's what these Jews did. That's how they paid us back.
I think that's how the Soviet Union got the atomic bomb as well, because obviously Jews in America were working for... the communist Soviet Union, and they would have wanted Stalin to get the bomb, no doubt.
Well, they were also feeding back information to the Soviet Union about the resistance in the Baltic states, in Latvia and Lithuania and Estonia, and the people that have been taken over. And I dare say in Croatia as well, everywhere that was taken over by the Soviets was looking to Britain to help them out against communism. And the information that they were giving to Britain was being fed straight back to the Soviet Union by these Jewish spies.
Instigating it. I mean, City London, the Jews in City London and the Wall Street Jews funded communism. So you're not going to get any help from that direction. By the way, I heard this week that Latvia are being inundated with migrants now. I don't know if you heard anything about it. They've been ordered to take a host of a real amount of immigrants.
Well, the EU is ordering every country to take them, but not everyone is. I mean, Poland has refused to. Yeah, Hungary has refused to. And it wouldn't surprise me if Latvia refuses to. I mean, Latvia doesn't like even having the Russian immigrants that they've got there from when they were in Soviet times. Mm. You know, you've got a large portion of Riga is actually Russian, or a large portion of Latvia. And the Latvians try to keep themselves Latvian, let alone allowing in Muslims. I mean, Latvians still a very, you know, 99% white country.
Yeah.
All those Baltic ones are.
Rightly so.
Indeed. Well, next up, it says, Hess himself is adamant that Hitler knew nothing of his intention. In his statements to the British, he says that he flew entirely on his own initiative. He also wrote to his adjutant, Karl-Heinz Pinch, thanking him for remaining silent. And there is evidence from Albert Speer, who witnessed Hitler's uncontrollable rage upon hearing about Hess's flight. There are also entries in Joseph Goebbels' diaries to the effect that Hitler said Hess deserved to be shot for treason. A 1946 investigation carried out by MI5 in Germany and made public in 1999 concluded that Hess had flown on his own initiative and without orders from Hitler. It confirmed that Hess had left a letter for Hitler stating his intention to obtain a last-minute understanding with Britain before the German offensive on the USSR in June 1941. Well, I would say that that could have been left there. They could have been covering that up because Hitler could hardly have acknowledged that it was okay for Hess to have done this, and he may well have been in an uncontrollable rage about hearing that he was caught. What do you think, Dennis?
I don't trust them sources, to be honest. Albert Speer, once he managed to survive Nuremberg and his imprisonment, was probably one of the least courageous of all those imprisoned. I mean, he wasn't really a soldier anyway. I've been dubious of much of what he said after he came out of prison. And if you're saying that, you know, Goebbels actually wrote that in his diary. It wouldn't surprise me if Goebbels' diary had been altered anyway. No, I don't trust them sources.
Yeah, I've heard that Goebbels' diary can't be trusted. But Speer, I think he was actually in Spandau prison alongside Hess, though, wasn't he, for a while?
I'm not sure. I know he managed to escape the death sentence, didn't he, by apologising. I mean, he was only an architect, I think. Might have had some. I think they built some secret hideaways for the weapons so that they wouldn't get targeted by the Air Force. I think he had some mountain hideaways, but overall, I mean, he wasn't really a soldier, and he kind of his beg for his life. Too strong a word. I don't know.
There must have been something that Hess knew that's why they were keeping him in prison.
Well, that's what killed him, I think, as well. I don't think he wanted to talk.
He couldn't have killed himself at 93. He was found hanging by a radiator with a bootlace. And it's quite clear that he couldn't have done that himself.
Well, it's not just that. He waited all that time to actually go and live with his family again. The last thing you're going to do is commit suicide. And like you said, he wouldn't have had the strength at that age.
I believe he had a coloured warden, and the suspicion is that it was the coloured warden that did this to him.
Well, I've heard that, and I've also heard that you know, the British were involved again. So I don't know.
Well, I'm inclined to think they were, but because they were releasing those files to say, look, we've been trying to get him out of prison, when they could easily have got him out of prison because they were the ones running the prison.
Yeah, exactly.
And they've tried to say, oh, it was the Soviets that were running it, but it was all four of them that were actually running it. And maybe we didn't want it to become a neo-Nazi shrine. We didn't want to encourage neo-Nazis. I think that plays into it as well.
Well, it's the same with Hitler's parents' grave as well. They removed that headstone, didn't they? But really, what it's all coming down to, I'm going back to this thing about hijacking of Britain and the Empire. When you look at World War II, even the king didn't want the war. They got rid of the king. I've said to you, there was 230 odd in this private club of the elite who didn't want to go to war. And it's like everything what the English were trying to do were being overridden by the Jews and by pushing Churchill. Beggars belief, to be honest.
They moved everything, that moved every mountain they could, didn't they, to make certain there was going to be war. Everything they could possibly do to make certain there was war. From the economic boycott and from 1936 onwards, the Jews were talking about there was going to be a war with Germany, there would have to be a war with Germany, and it was all because the Jews felt their own interests were threatened there. That was the only reason for it.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's this... Once Hitler had taken parts of Europe, then the huge empire was shrinking.
Well, yeah, any country that was taken over by Germany was suddenly in a better position than it was when it was free.
They no longer had... replaced by Christian leaders, believe it or not.
Christian leaders and no usury in the banks. You can see the difference between France when it was taken over by the Germans. There's some great pictures of France in 1940, and France today. Yeah, every country that they took over. And you don't see armed soldiers, you just see civilians.
Yeah, just peacefully getting on with their daily routine.
With civilian government. And when you hear about they had an armistice in France, that's the same as we had in with Northern Ireland. And yet all after that armistice, they were encouraging the French resistance to attack the Germans, weren't they? They were encouraging partisans and arming them. And that would be the same as a country arming and encouraging the IRA to continue bombing Britain.
And yeah, that's I don't think the French were impressed when the Americans landed, to be honest. There was a lot of things going on behind the scenes there. You know, France was quite peaceful to that point.
Yeah, the liberation of France. I mean, they had this plastic fake government in exile, which is similar to this fake Syrian government that they've got. I forget what the name of it is, the transitional Syrian government. But they had the equivalent of that for France that was holed up in Britain, while actually in France, they had a perfectly functioning government chosen by the people.
Poland were the same, weren't it? They kind of moved to Canada after they got stabbed in the back.
Yeah, Poland's fortunes were absolutely tragic from the war onwards. As you know, the Jews are trying to get reparations out of the Poles for the way they were treated. And the Poles were under occupation.
Does it surprise you?
Yeah, they've just brought a law out to prevent anyone saying that there were Polish death camps, which the Jews are furious about, because it basically means that the Jews can't get any reparations out of Poland. Poland is refusing to give in to the Holocaust shakedown. It's really good to see.
That'll do for me.
Next up, we've got a little bit about the actual flight itself. It says, some have said that Hess could not have flown over German territory without authorisation. But in the same way that RAF aircraft could fly over Britain, aircraft with German markings could fly unhindered almost anywhere over their own territory. Now, I'm not so sure that's truthful.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
You still have to have authorisation, don't you?
Yeah. But I mean, wartime, a lot of things do, get thrown to the wayside. You know what I mean? Some things get tighter, but some things get slacker, you know.
Well, you think they would need to know what plane that was that they could hit?
Definitely, yeah. Otherwise they'd be fly over.
Yeah, well, they'd be firing at it, wouldn't they?
Yeah, more than likely.
quite clearly. I mean, there are some other reports that he stopped off at Ski Pole, and other reports that other German authorities were working in collusion with him. But really, there's no sort of hard and fast evidence for this. I mean, we do know that when he got to Britain, they did drug him. They severely drugged him and tested out these truth drugs on him. And when he was in Nuremberg, they were unsure whether he was really sort of gone quite insane or not. And that was due to these drugs. He kept saying, the British have drugged me. The British have drugged me.
But, wouldn't surprise me if it was no, to be honest, because, like I said, he didn't want to go to war anyway. I just really don't trust the sources of Hitler going bananas, etc. You know what I mean? It wouldn't surprise me if Hitler had known.
Well, David Irving's done a really big book on it. I think he might have done two. I haven't read them. I will do one day, because they will be good books to read. There's someone in the chat room that's reading them right now, so hopefully we'll get some reports from him on what actually happened. But Scotland Yard was apparently given the names of the British agents who allegedly murdered Rudolf Hess in Spandau Prison, but was then advised by prosecutors not to pursue its investigations, according to a police report in 2013. Yeah. So that's a police report that says that, yes, it was the British who murdered Rudolf Hess in his prison at age 93.
They didn't want him to talk. He knew something, and they didn't want him to talk.
I wonder what that was. What do you think that could have been, Dennis?
Well, it's obviously got something to do with the war and peace. But, you know, somebody will know. It's just that people who know aren't for telling.
Well, it's got to be something that's been covered up all this time. I mean, it can't be about the Holler hoax or anything like that. It's got to be something that hasn't come out at all.
I think it's about the war and the start of the war. That, you know, probably the way that the war was taking shape or about to take place, which was going against everything that Germany wanted.
And because he wasn't actually guilty of doing anything in the war.
He didn't even take part. Prison.
Yeah. So that's why they had to come out with crimes against peace.
But everybody's that poor.
No, I don't understand what they mean by crimes against peace.
Crimes against peace is Dresden.
Yeah. Yeah, they were peaceful people that were just seeking refuge from the aerial attacks. A lot of them at Dresden were fleeing from the East, from the communists as well.
Oh, yeah, plenty of refugees, because they were raping and pillaging, as we know.
Hardly a military target.
Well, what was amazing about that is they bombed the place, they firebombed it. I think Thomas Goodrich mentioned something about how the flesh would melt in the cellars and just be like a pool of liquid flesh. But those who did manage to escape, once the raid was over and they went out on the streets, another wave of I think it was Spitfires, which chased them with machine guns up and down, the streets.
It's horrific, isn't it? One group of people, and somebody comes up with ideas of firebombing civilians and utterly destroying one of the most picturesque cities there's ever been in Europe. And then you've got this other guy who is so courageous, he jumps out of an aeroplane, he flies out from Germany in the middle of war, parachutes out of the plane for the first time ever on a peace mission, just on that small chance that it could be truthful, that he's going to meet this Duke and he can arrange peace and he can tell whoever it is that he's talking to, this Duke, what's going on in Russia. Because don't forget, at this time, there wasn't proper communication. I mean, he probably had information on what had happened in Kachin and what the Soviets were doing, and he would have said, look, these people you're allied with are committing these atrocities, and we want to go into Russia to liberate these Russian people that have been taken over and are being massacred by these Soviets. I mean, this man was so brave and so courageous, and to then have his life end in this way. 15 years in solitary confinement, Dennis. 15 years.
Well, it's torture, that, isn't it? It's classed as Her son did 2 years, didn't he, in Canada? But 15 years, is another level again, isn't it? It is what it is. I mean, like I said, I've been investigating the British Empire. And every time, I don't know if you remember or not, in the South African episode where the British public were stunned and didn't agree with warring on women and children and putting them in camps. You know, the British people themselves were furious. The same happened again in India and in Ireland even. You know, people, these are satanic. They really are.
That's the only word for it, isn't it? It's beyond evil. Really beyond evil. It's just malicious. The best people get treated in this way. I mean, Rudolf Hess was one of the best. You know, doing that. Amazing man. Absolutely amazing man. But at least we're still talking about him today, and we're certainly never going to forget him.
One of these days, you know, the world may change and he'll become the hero that he really should have been.
Well, you brought up the suffragettes earlier. I mean, they were terrorists. They are terrorists. But look at the way they're lauded today, and they make out how amazing and wonderful they were. Yet they were terrorists. And this man was a great hero, and he's made out to be this warlord, super criminal. So maybe in decades to come, maybe he will be remembered for who he really was, and we'll have a special day. Because he should have a special
things
day
that happens,
to him.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, certainly. All right, well, let's move on to the next subject, Freemasonry. And I'm sure our British listeners saw the Freemasons on the news this week. They've been on all the news programmes. They've been on talk shows, breakfast TV in the morning. Quite bizarre to wake up in the morning and hear them talking about Freemasonry as I'm eating my breakfast. And what it all boils down to is that Freemasons are claiming they've been discriminated against. Yeah. In the week that it was revealed that two secret Masonic lodges were operating at Westminster, that's the other story that's come out this week, the head of the United Grand Lodge has joined the victim bandwagon and made the first move in calling for special privileges to ensure Freemasons are not criticised. Freemasons have been undeservedly stigmatised and are facing discrimination, one of the organisation's leaders has said. In adverts placed in the Times and the Daily Telegraph newspapers on Thursday, David Staples, the chief executive of the United Grand Lodge of England, said the organisation would be holding a series of open evenings to answer questions about who they are and what they do. The United Grand Lodge of England believes that the ongoing gross misrepresentation of its 200,000 plus members is discrimination, Staples said in the advert. Our members shouldn't have to feel undeservedly stigmatised. No other organisation would stand for this, and nor should we. In media interviews, Staples has also claimed that an investigation by the Commons Home Affairs Select Committee concluded that there was nothing sinister about Freemasonry in Britain. Yeah. The investigation in the late 1990s concluded that there are cases where allegations of improper Masonic influence may well be justified. And it recommended that Freemasons in the police, local government, and Parliament be required to declare their membership, which, of course, they never did. They never took any notice of this Home Affairs Select Committee investigation. Dennis, will you be going to one of these open evenings or requesting that they invite you to one?
Well, to be honest, I'm probably number one on the hit list, to be honest. While you were talking, I was looking for a violin. I couldn't find one, to be honest. it just beggars belief that these people are claiming that their games are being picked on. And at the end of the day, it's not a conspiracy. What people with the internet are now far wiser. I believe that, you know, not many people are joining the Freemasons these days. I mean, it's boring researching them, never mind joining them. But at the end of the day, the bottom line is to push communism. It's Jewish to the core. It is a religion. You may have to believe in an entity, but that entity can include Lucifer. And Lucifer, I believe, is the god. And when they go on about how they've been picked on and all this kind of thing, if they weren't a secret about everything, maybe, you know, they won't get picked on as much. But they'll always be secret because it's a secret society. And who wants a secret society in the country when you're not part of it? Or you don't want to be part of it?
Did you see any of the interviews where this guy was being interviewed?
They were, what annoyed me was that they were saying that these conspiracies are now affecting these Freemasons because they won't come out and say they actually are Freemasons because they've been threatened of losing their jobs. What?
What?
Exactly.
Half of them have only got their jobs because they're Freemasons.
Because they're Masons. Exactly.
Part of the funny handshake club. The interview I saw, they were asking the head of the Masons whether this was going on, and he was saying, "Oh no, of course it doesn't go on." And the interviewer was going, "Okay, well, that's put that myth to bed, then, hasn't it?" You know, you might as well.
Good job, Aaron, on the program.
Ask the devil whether he's involved in any devilry. Of course, he's going to tell you, "No, I'm not. Of course, I'm not."
He's going to say, "I don't exist."
you could just see them inviting, you know, their National Front on there and saying, are you really against Jews? And them saying, no, of course we're not against Jews. We're not against immigration. Oh, that's fine. Yeah, we believe you. It just wouldn't happen. they just invite this guy on there and they take every word that he says is gospel. It's quite obvious that the TV interviewer is a Mason as well. One of them said, show us the funny handshake then. And he was like, oh no, I can't do that. But you can find it online. And they were saying, well, why can't you do that then? And he said, oh, because I've promised I wouldn't. And they said, well, who have you promised that to? Oh, well, it's an oath. It's just an oath that we take. Yes, but who was that oath to?
A blood oath.
Yeah, a blood oath. And he wouldn't admit that they had these secret rituals. And he was saying, oh, these rituals don't mean anything. I mean, some of them are about, you know, if I break the trust or grass up on another Mason or talk about Masonry, they'll cut your tongue out. They'll leave you at the shore at the high tide watermark and all this really bizarre stuff. There was no mention of any of that. He was just like, no, they wouldn't do this.
Exactly. They changed the name of temple to lodges because they claimed another religion where, you know, it is religion. There's an altar there, and there's a Bible there, and there's prayers there, and everything else what goes with religion.
Well, he was saying if we ever hear of a Mason that helps other Masons out, or is involved in anything illegal, or doesn't report on another Mason in legal matters, then they would be out of the Masons. But that goes against the oath, doesn't it? The oath is to help out the other Masons, no matter what. Which is what
there's a story right in the Civil War in America where a Freemason, I think he's on the Union side or the Confederate side, maybe, I can't remember now, who just say we're on the Union side, and he was injured. When he was picked up by the Confederates, he said, "Can you get me a Freemason?" Eventually, they found a high ranking Freemason for him, and he was treated to all the best medical attention. You know, he was sent away, recovered from the war, from his wounds and everything. Point being, if that was a Christian, they'd have left him dead in the field.
Yeah, it's the brotherhood, isn't it? They take these oaths to do that. The bizarre thing is, I mean, as I was looking this up, I was thinking, right, well, let's get some quotes from this. I found another news story to do with Freemasons from exactly the same week. And this is in Italy, and this one's really good because it bears out a lot of what you've been saying about fascism, Dennis. But this also proves that, yes, this does still go on. They do still have these Masons all looking out for the other ones. This happened in Italy last week as well. Italian politicians will be forced to declare whether they are Freemasons under laws being drawn up after revelations that mafia bosses are joining lodges to strike deals with elected officials. The legislation is being proposed after police raids on the four largest Freemasonry orders in Italy discovered 193 mob-linked Masons on the order's secret membership lists in Sicily and Calabria southern Italy. The findings were published last month by the Italian Parliament's Anti-Mafia Commission, which alleged that mobsters use secret lodge meetings to do business with politicians and entrepreneurs. Laws proposed by the commission would ban magistrates from joining the Masons and compel public officials to say if they are members. Rosie Bindi, the commission president, said she also hoped to compel Masons to compile proper membership lists. About 25% of the names that were found on their lists were just initials or in code, she said. There is no transparency, and we believe society should keep proper records. The threat to end Masonic secrecy provoked a storm of protest from members who claim that the law is inspired by the ban on the orders put in place by the fascist dictator Benito Mussolini in 1925. These new proposals are a throwback to the fascist ban and are a wider threat to democracy as a whole, said Stefano Bisi, Grand Master of the Grand Orient d'Italia, Italy's largest order.
For a mafia squad.
Yeah, which has 23,000 members. Mr. Yeah. Bisi said Italian Masons were right to keep their membership secret due to prejudice against them in Italy, dating back to fascism, but also linked to hostility from the Roman Catholic Church. They excommunicated us in 1738, yet we never burned anyone, he said. But he did admit that the reputation of Italian Masonry suffered in the 1970s with the discovery of the ultra-right wing P2 Lodge, which was implicated in corruption linked to the suspected murder of the banker Roberto Calvi in London and included Secret Service chiefs and a young Silvio Berlusconi on its books. Well, no wonder they will allow that one to be talked about because it was quote-unquote ultra-right wing, I would say. Well, that just proves what they're saying, doesn't it?
I've touched on that in Communism by the Back Door. Mussolini actually was the mafia's worst nightmare. But yet the Americans backed the gangsters, and after World War II, many of these gangsters were politicians in Sicily.
Well, just out of four lodges, they're saying here, that's all, they found 193 Masons that were in the mafia.
Yeah.
And that's just out of four. And straight away, they say, oh, this is fascism. This is fascism. No, it isn't. It's the mafia in these secret lodges.
Lucky Luciano was involved, weren't he? He was released from prison because of his contacts in Sicily. The Americans had him working for him.
Well, I'm not sure about who he was, Lucky Luciano. Who was he?
He was one of the leading gangsters in America, along, you know, with the Jew. I can't remember his name. Then there was a Jewish one as well. But luckily, Luciano run the whole mafia.
Well, there's links, isn't there? You can see the links between the Freemasonry, the organized crime, the mafia, and the Jews, and the intelligence services.
Yeah, all in the same boat.
Yeah, they're all interconnected at a certain really high level. They are all interconnected and they work together. That's why these organized criminals are allowed to exist, because they feed back information of what's happening on the street to the intelligence, and the intelligence feed it to the government, and the Masons are involved in that as well. And the Jews are involved in that because, Rothschilds, 200 years ago, they could communicate all across Europe with their bankers. So they would transport money from one bit to another, and also information. So they got in on the intelligence providing. It's all a horrible incestuous nest.
Most of them are all Freemasons, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And Hollywood's all full of Freemasons. On and on it goes. Everybody that you've got a distaste for, you know, are involved in all this kind of undercover corruption.
And they'll make out that the intelligence officers are superheroes like James Bond. But they're not really. They're Freemasons and Jews. That's what these spies are.
Well, Britain's steeped in it, isn't it? I mean, there's no doubt about Britain. I know Hitler had a list, if he ever did invade England, he had a whole list of places that would have been shut down.
Well, it's interesting that the lists that they're talking about here, like the members' lists, 25% of them have just got initials on them or code.
slightly ashamed.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of very important people on that list that, you know, the authorities don't know about, even though they've had a look for them.
I think it's one of the reasons that paedophilia has never been really nailed. You know, when they have in Westminster and the government, they have this these paedophile rings, and there's always a wall there. Now, you know, paedophilia, it goes back to Babylon again, back to those days where Freemasonry is, you know, it is practiced, and then you got the wall of silence as well. And they may throw the odd one to the line, but not normally. You know, they wait till they're dead, like Savile.
Well, I'm sure that's linked up with it. You know, you got paedophile rings, and if they're part of the Masons as well, then that's like an added layer of secrecy, isn't it?
Well, I watched this program the other week about a TV thing where the police were chasing. I think you have to survive 3 weeks and you're £100,000 or something. And so they were chasing these people with all the technology, with the phones and the cameras everywhere today. It didn't take the police long to pick these people up. But one particular person was a Freemason, and he had that system where they could, you know, even though they didn't know him, they hear him wanting shelter and food, and it was automatically put on for him. This is his underground links to the Freemasonry, and the police were struggling to catch him.
Oh, you know what? We need to be our own Freemasons, and if we've got nationalists that need food and shelter, we should be helping them out.
They close us down, though.
Well, you know, we try to. I mean, this is something that I say to people about going out and meeting other nationalists. You know, you will meet the nicest people. You know, you'll meet people that have got your back and that will do everything they can to help you. We're not the monsters that the media make us out to be. I'm sure our listeners know that anyway, Dennis. But it does bear.
I'm pretty sure they do.
Well, the final story I've got here is the Church of England's response to Freemasonry. Now, we just heard about these links with organised crime in Italy. We've heard about secret lodges that are in Westminster. That's two secret lodges revealed this week, operating in the heart of the Houses of Parliament. And the Church of England has been celebrating it. That's what this story tells us. The Church of England has reiterated significant concerns about Christians becoming Freemasons amidst renewed controversy about the presence of the secretive organisation at the heart of the British establishment. Christopher Coxworth, the Bishop of Coventry, flagged up a 1987 report issued by the Church that highlighted a number of very fundamental reasons to question the compatibility of Freemasonry and Christianity. Well, that all sounds very good until you hear this bit. The bishop was responding to a question tabled at the church's General Synod meeting this week in London, which sought information on services celebrating last year's 300th anniversary of the Grand Lodge of England, held in a number of Anglican cathedrals. So a number of cathedrals have been celebrating 300 years of Freemasonry, while the Bishop of Coventry is saying, oh no, this is terrible. We have significant concerns about Freemasonry. Just have a look at our 1987 report. So the right hand is saying that, while the left hand is having parties in these cathedrals to celebrate Freemasonry. How's that?
Well, I've always felt the Anglican Church wasn't what it pretended to be, so that doesn't surprise me. For people out there who don't know anything about Freemasonry, it is incompatible with Christianity. I can't remember what they're called now, but you know these Amazon have them and Google have and it's like a thing where you walk into the house and switch the lights on and all the lights come on and things like that. I can't remember what they're called. But apparently there were 40 million of these sold in America. Google sold 40 million last Christmas. And there's also questions. You can ask this thing a question and it answers you. And one of the questions it was asked was, who was Jesus? And the reply came from one of these Amazon Google things. Can't help you there.
Is that one of the Alexa? That's what it's called, isn't it?
That's the one. That's it. Yeah. Didn't know who Jesus was.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I'm sure they'll be
probably the boldest move I've seen them do in some time, these Luciferians.
You know, they'll make it as politically correct as possible. The Anglican Church this week has also been in the news with it being Holocaust Day the other week, and the Archbishop has actually attacked Alison Chablow for singing funny songs about the Holocaust. So they're having celebrations of Freemasons in the cathedrals. They're attacking free speech. They're attacking a singer just for singing jokes about discredited Holocauxes. They're just absolute hypocrites. I know you don't like the Anglican Church, but I have no love for them myself, Dennis. I really don't.
No, well, like I said, I think these are Christians pretending to be Christians who certainly are not Christians. I can remember the Olympic Games and the Archbishop of Canterbury was in his box with the Queen and whatever. And if I don't really remember or not, like, but when Lucifer was coming down from the skies on his jetpack. I've seen a photograph of the people watching, and the ecstasy on the Archbishop of Canterbury's face watching Lucifer coming down from the skies is just remarkable. You can see just what he feels about this Luciferian agenda.
Well, they're all compromised, aren't they? They're all compromised. Yeah. And they'd all say, oh, no, we're not Freemasons. But, of course, their names will be the ones that are just the initials or a name that is something else that's actually on the membership list. Because that's the whole point of it. It's a secret society. So you don't know who is and who isn't. There was a time when it was 90% of the police were Freemasons. I don't know if that's still true.
Probably. I mean, you know, nothing's changed, has it, really?
I'd probably make a safe bet that 100% of the intelligence services are. Of course, the intelligence services are going to be. They're all going to be members of these secret societies.
Yeah, because they're not going to have a secret society, are they?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean by that. That's how these things start out. I mean, the intelligence services, they've got terrorist organizations, they've got drug running organizations, they've got child pornography organizations. You know, it's a fine line between preventing crime and actually providing it. Because if they start providing it, then that's how they get the intelligence to feed back so they know what's going on. I mean, that's what's happened with this National Action ban. They've banned National Action. They've made them terrorists. And now they're trying to entice people to join National Action. And it wouldn't surprise me if they did set up another National Action group that's actually run by the intelligence services, just as bait.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that's what they do with these Islamic organizations. That we know that there's been court cases where they've caught jihadis like that with these fake organizations that they've set up. The FBI have done that many times in America. I think just about every case where they got a jihadi at one time in America was through the FBI's own jihadi organizations. That's the way they work. That's the way they work.
It is. It's a huge spider's web and take some deciphering.
Well, at least you're deciphering it for us, Dennis.
Trying.
On YouTube and waking us up. Well, thanks for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with another Truthful Out Radio for you. So until then, we hope you all do have a great weekend ahead of you, and we'll see you next Friday.
To Radio Ariane.